name is Joshua Alvarez.
I am Liam O'Donnell.
And welcome to Cinepunks. Episode 17.
17, y'all.
The Halloween edition.
Whoa.
Welcome, everybody, to Cinepunks. Episode 17, Halloween edition, because this is the beginning of October.
Yeah.
And we are stoked.
So stoked.
This is the best time of the year. This is like Christmas for me. Like, you know, for people who like Christmas.
Yeah. Big ups to, we've gotten some new listeners.
Yes.
Big ups to anyone who's checked us out because of Fantastic Fest or the Fantastic Fest episode. We really appreciate that.
Thanks for listening, everybody, and continue to listen to us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
And hopefully you're getting something from it, too. That you're entertained. Yeah.
Well, and shout out, we were just saying before we started recording, but I want to shout out to my friend, Justin Harlan, who says we're like one of the things he listens to when he drives to work.
There you go. And Jeff Pelley also.
Yeah, Jeff Pelley.
Jeff Pelley just recently has a new responsibility, his job, where he has to drive all over the place. And during these long drives, he listens to Cinepunks. So, hey, Jeff, you're the best, man. I love you.
Yeah, I want to... remind everyone, Jeff Pelley is the gentleman that I knocked out with a cartwheel at a show in the 90s.
Still one of the funniest stories ever.
Yeah.
And Jeff is also one of the greatest people. I will be hanging out with Jeff Pelley this Saturday.
Oh, what are you doing?
Lifetime. The Stone Pony.
Who's opening that Lifetime show?
It's Lemuria, Spraynard, and Mouthpiece.
So I'm stoked on one of those bands.
Because I think we can.
I think we can. Do you think we can win?
I'm pretty sure we can win. I'm quite sure. I might not be able to toe touch, but I will be able to win, I believe.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. That's what I'm doing.
Okay. Anyway. This is our Halloween episode. We're going to be talking about some horror-y things.
The ephemera of this darkened season.
Yeah, and even with the delay, I mean, it's going to take a while to get this one up. It won't even be Halloween yet, so you may be thinking, like, what are these guys talking about Halloween? But I don't know about you, Josh, but for me, October is Halloween.
October is Halloween. Dude, as soon as September closes, it's already pumpkins. Bonfires burning bright, pumpkin faces in the night.
And I don't even want to hear any complaints about that. Like, I've had some people be like, well, it's weird, whatever. Yo, Christmas eats the whole winter.
It does. It really
does.
The
whole thing.
Yeah, it spills into fall. New Year's. New Year's has nothing to do with Christmas.
No.
And yet the whole thing is lumped
Christmas
together.
Just keeps expanding. And anyone who knows, you know, the listeners know, I'm sort of a churchy guy. I went to school for that. So let me just let you know, the whole idea that Christmas starts after Thanksgiving... Don't put that on the church folk. That's not how Christmas works liturgically.
So Black Friday is not a liturgical holiday?
No. Even if you include Advent, which, let's be clear, Advent is not Christmas. The whole point of Advent is that it's not Christmas.
Right.
But even that doesn't start Black Friday. Like, that's not how that works at all.
You know what's on Black Friday?
What?
Coxpar and H2O at Union Transfer. What? Oi, oi, oi. It's going to be great.
We're not at the things we're hyped on section yet, but we're both so excited about that.
Oh,
we have
God.
To go there right away.
I can't even begin to tell you.
And so, you know, I do have to say this. This was a little bit of an issue I had on the internets recently.
Right.
Because some of the same folks... There were a bunch of people who were upset at the price of the Coxbar.
The $40 ticket price.
They're expensive tickets.
Coxbar are here from England.
They came from England. And you may remember the last time they came, they hadn't been here in a while. They played two shows. They had a bunch
back
of shows.
Back to back. It was so awesome.
It was so awesome. But the thing is that, like, you know, you may have noticed the cost went up. Well, they are playing shows again. They sound amazing.
They sound great.
They cost more money now. And that's just how it is.
Yeah.
And I get people's frustration, whatever, but I'm also kind of like, I don't know. Like, I had a few people say, like, I would never pay $40 for something. And I've paid more than $40.
Come on.
For other artists who I care less about than Cox.
It's true.
So, and then, you know, I hate to be this jerk, but I think American Nightmare tickets were $30.
Were they?
They were $25, and then with service fees, they went up to about $30, $31.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's about $9 less. Now, granted, with service fees, I guess Coxbar tickets were more.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, the fact that you even, like, at this point, American Nightmare should be like a $10 at the door ticket. That's just how I feel.
That's how Liam feels. I love American Nightmare. I didn't get American Nightmare tickets, but because I've seen them enough, let's be honest. But I will never see enough Coxbar.
Yeah.
I think that's
my point. This isn't about the fact that I think American Nightmare is overrated, which I do. But even if you love American Nightmare, how could you I just don't know how you can compare it to Cox Bar. Like, that's...
Yeah. Well, I don't know, man. It's just time. Because American Nightmare don't even have anywhere near the longevity that Cox Bar do. Cox Bar started being a band 5 years before I started existing. Think about that for a moment. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Shit. And I'm old as shit. But anyway.
Yeah, you are.
Totally not important.
All right.
But this leads us into things that we have done lately.
Yeah.
That we are stoked on.
Yeah, this is our Stokes and Jokes.
Stokes and Jokes. Or something like that.
That's
not the official name.
Let's put this out there. We're trying to come up with a cool
section name
for this segment. Because right now we were like, oh, it's things we're stoked on or we're hyped on. But we also want to like say like things we've done that were not good. This is right. Just...
So this is just a litany of historical value. Just to make people
know. It's almost
know.
Like our highs and lows, but we need it to sound more awesome than that.
Yeah, and highs and lows sound like that Sunday cartoon in the newspaper. That
Yo, what about sweets and beets?
Sweets and beets. That's a little... It sounds a little more.
How about sick or dick?
Sick or no? I like whack versus on track.
Oh,
this is the whack versus on track section.
Josh, what have you done recently that was on track?
On track. Well, on October 5th, last Saturday, we opened the Halloween season for the Philomoka.
Oh, right,
with the Art Comes Ripping, Danzig-inspired ripping. Art show and punk rock show.
Yeah.
And a couple bands played. We had the Pink Angels and the Ghost Dads. Ghost Dads came out in red jumpsuits and were incredible.
Can we talk just for a second? I know you missed some of it, but can we talk about the pre-show?
The pre-show. Oh, yeah, Lil Sean was singing. I missed it because I was standing outside like an asshole.
You may remember Lil Sean from our episode with Eric Bressler. He is a star at this point. He's had his own day, which he talked about on our show. He's got
a movie already that he
directed. He got a movie. They're already starting the second movie, Lil Sean movie. This kid is, what, 11, 9?
12 years old, as I was corrected. Yeah.
He's 12 years old. So his band, which is just him and two Philomoka people
him and
doing
Rob
crazy.
Scarlett, right? And I forgot I don't know who the other guy was.
They, let me just tell you, I saw a few of their songs.
She just burped.
Yeah, I just burped.
Shout out to Federal Donuts for their delicious coffee.
Professional. That's what delightful. We are.
Anyway, sorry.
Shout out to Federal Donuts. We'll take endorsements, by the way.
Yes, we love you.
Felicia.
Go on.
Hit me up, Felicia.
Felicia. Lil Sean.
Lil Sean, his band was cool. They played a song. It wasn't like a hardcore song, but they had a song that was more intense. And they had kind of like a droney, almost like a William Shatner-y sort of spoken word song.
So bummed that I missed that.
Speaking of which, if you go to the Philomoka YouTube page, there is
the video of Lil Sean
doing
Rocket Man. Oh my god!
But like in the style of Will Shatner,
they even have him projected on there
of himself talking to like the old video. I know I'm really loud and excited about this, but Lil Sean, if you have not,
George, calm down. That's my dog. Nothing to worry about.
If you have not given Lil Sean a chance, you need to think about doing that.
Dude, Eric told me himself because he did the Rocketman video, and he said that that's the greatest thing he's ever done, which is hilarious in and of itself. But anyway, he opened the Art Comes Ripping show, and I missed it.
Yeah, and then you had the Dad
Ghost Dads
Ghost
came
Dads
out, and they were
Pink Ladies,
the Pink Angels,
Pink Angels.
So Ghost Dads came out in full red jumpsuits and were running all over the place. They reminded me of a young Action Patrol, if you remember that band. So, you know, pretty fun, good times. There was a mustache. It was cool. And then Ghost Dads came on, but I missed them altogether because I was busy preparing for my set by putting corpse paint on.
Tell people about this band that you're in.
My band was called In the Fire. And if you lived in the central New Jersey area between the years of 1997 to 2001... and you listen to punk rock or subscribe to that type of like alternative rockin' kind of lifestyle, then you would have heard of Vintage Vinyl Records, which is in Fords, New Jersey. I worked there with a gentleman who went by the name of Metal Joe. And Metal Joe is one of my very good friends at this point. Like, we work together a lot, and we've been through a lot of stuff together. We're just bros, right?
Yeah.
So I move away from there, and here we are 15 years later, and now Metal Joe has 4 children, of which 7-year-old Rune, his son, wanted to do a band and is obsessed.
His name is Rune.
Rune Misfit is the name that his stage name.
Oh shit!
Yeah, he's the man. So Rune asked Joe if we could do a band, and Metal Joe asked me if I wanted to do a Misfits band, and I said yes. I would. And then we got the show at Philomoka. So, I also enlisted the aid of Mr. David Steele, one of the great tattooers at Chinatown Eddie's Tattooing.
Good dude.
And,
good dude.
Awesome guy. Awesome guy. So me and Metal Joe and Dave Steele are three big, ugly guys with tattoos. And then Little Rune is 7 years old and is our singer. So we did the set of Misfit songs, six Misfit songs with Rune singing.
Which six songs?
It, we did. We opened with We Are 138, went to She.
Perfect. Perfect.
Attitude. Perfect. 20 Eyes, Skulls, and Halloween.
That's
which
pretty great.
Which we played twice,
you
by played the way.
Halloween twice?
We played Halloween twice, yeah.
I remember Halloween.
People were losing their shit. It was
were people so, mooshing? Was there
people
mooshing?
People were mooshing. There's a lot of jumping up and down.
Yes,
halfway
the pogo.
Through the set, a fuse blew, and the microphone went out, so we're just kind of standing there looking at each other. And the Philomoka had like a bunch of people in it, and it was dead quiet. And then Rune was standing there, and I was standing there, and I'm looking like a angry fat juggalo, like an Asian
juggalo.
Yeah,
you juggalo. Are an yeah, Asian juggalo.
It was some weird shit, dude. But then microphones came back on, and we ripped the rest of the set, and it was a great time. And Rune had an awesome experience as being the singer of his own Misfits band. It was pretty funny, too, because afterwards he was like, so, Josh, you think maybe after this we could do our own material? Like, we can start writing new stuff and put out a record?
That's what the 7-year-old said.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He keeps on saying stuff like, apparently, which I think is really funny. But he's a very smart and witty kid. And, yeah, he wants to do a real band. And I'm not going to lie. Sure. Why not? I'm in. What else am I doing? You know what I mean? Like, it's all good. But, yeah, it was really, really
fun.
Are you
trying to ride the, what's that band? The three kids who played outside band?
Oh, the metal band.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to ride their coattails.
Okay. What if you reported some, like, little kid tour?
Yeah, yeah. I think you might have heard of a little band in the early 90s that went by the name of Criss Cross. Yeah, yeah. I think we're trying to do the male punk rock, or the old punk rock version of that. No, that's not true. We wear our clothes frontwards. But, yeah, no, it was a good time. It was just, it was pretty ridiculous, and I'm really glad that we got
to
do it.
So that was on track.
That was way on track.
So what was whack, Josh?
What was whack? I don't know. Wait, why don't you say what's on track for you first? And
okay.
Then we'll go into whack.
So a few things have been on track for me. There's a whole episode where we talk about Fantastic Fest, so I don't want to talk about that. I guess I'll say what was on track, but I think this is what was whack for you.
Because
I really enjoyed that movie, Gone Girl.
Gone Girl, yeah. It was whack for me.
I think we're not going to get too in-depth in it because we want to do a whole episode, I think, on
it, actually.
So we're going to have to make time for that. And hopefully that'll still be relevant. I think it will because I think people are seeing the movie.
Yeah.
So
plus, there's going to be a lot of other stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
Because we're going to discuss gender roles in exploitation films and all this kind of stuff. So
yeah, I mean, I will say this: I was thoroughly entertained. That was actually also my whack. Let me combine those two into one thing. So on track, I liked Gone Girl. I do see the reason people feel like there's issues of misogyny and whatnot, but I think something more complicated is going on there, and me and Josh will talk about that. My whack part of that, we went to check out a new theater.
You told me you saw it with a bunch of, like, frat boys.
Well, so this is what happened. We went to go to show... you guys know I moved to Easton. We talked about it on the show a little bit. So I live in Easton now. It's there's pluses and minuses to that.
Mm-hmm.
The neighborhood I'm in is really cute. This is weird, I think, this way, but the neighborhood is so cute. I feel like there should be a slasher film there.
Wow.
Everywhere I go, I'm
so
like...
So it's Haddonfield?
Yeah, no. Like, everywhere I go in the neighborhood I moved to, I'm like, man, I wish I knew how to make a movie. Like, I want to make a slasher movie so bad.
That'd be awesome.
And I've gotten to hang out with some people, like our friend Justin Lohr. I've seen a couple times. Justin Harlan, who I mentioned before, has come to visit me. That's about it, really. There's also some negatives. And one of the negatives is I'm trying to get to know the movie theaters in the area. Mm-hmm. So there's a movie theater. There's a place in Bethlehem. So Bethlehem's like the cool... I mean, Easton's in the Lehigh Valley, for people who aren't familiar with the area. It's north of Philadelphia. And it's closer to New York, so it's considered more of the New York-y part of PA. And Allentown's sort of the big town. Mm-hmm. And it's, from what I can tell, kind of shitty.
Right.
And then Easton's like on the edge, and it's parts of it are nice, parts of it are rough. Bethlehem's sort of like the nice town.
Right.
Everyone loves the Bethlehem. And I was kind of surprised. There actually is like a town in Bethlehem. Like, I thought Bethlehem was all like associated strip malls, but there's actually like a downtown Bethlehem.
Right.
But slightly outside that, there's this place called the Steel Stacks. And it's like the old metal place, like not metal like the music, metal like working. And it's like a concert venue now, and there's a fairgrounds, and there's all this stuff, and there's a movie theater there, the Arts Quest Pub Theater, whatever. And I guess it's like they do slightly off movies. It's not quite the Ritz, but it's like slightly more artsy, you know, outside Hollywood.
Independent, difficult to
see. And they have a bar, so you they don't serve you in the theater, but you could buy booze and then bring it in or whatever. So I went there.
I'm going to say that's not a big deal for me.
No, yeah, whatever. I don't know why
people are into that. The only movie food that I need is the soda and the popcorn.
No, but that's because you haven't been to, and we need to go to an
Alamo. I've gone in Florida. I did the whole eat the meal while we watched the Rum Diaries a couple years ago, and...
Yeah, but that had to be affected by the fact you were watching the Rum Diaries.
Yeah, both the meal and the movie were terrible. Yeah. So Florida's pretty
cool. Eating in the theater's cool. Whatever, that's not the point. The point is the movie theater's in this big thing. So we went to go to the movie, and they were having Oktoberfest, which involved the entire out. So like there is a concert sort of stage thing outside the theater, but this whole area was shut down. So we had to go through like security just to get to the movie theater.
Oh, God.
And then there's just drunk people everywhere. And, like, you know, I'm new to the area, so I try not to be too judgmental. But if the people at Oktoberfest are representative of the majority of Bethlehem people, then I'm, like, severely bummed out. Like, that – it was, like, the worst.
No judgments. No judgments.
No, these were, like, the worst people ever. Everywhere drunk. Well, I'm just trying to go to a movie, which I'm, like, not emotionally prepared to deal with drunkos as I'm trying to get into my movie. And, if you listen to Fantastic –
Drunkos.
If you listen to Fantastic Fest episode, right, you know that there's a lot of drinking at Fantastic Fest. So you think I'd be used to this. But, again, movie geeks are much more reserved. These were, like, normal-ass, slightly mulleted – bar people who are like, Oktoberfest! And I'm like, yo, I'm just trying to go see a movie. So I go to the movie, and I go into the movie, and the crowd in the movie is definitely not the Oktoberfest crowd. So I'm stoked. I was worried there'd be bleed through, but everyone here seems at least rational.
Uh-huh.
And Bethlehem is a college town. There's Lehigh University and Moravian College. And so in my row, I'm sitting with my wife, and then next to us is this old couple who I can figure out, I think is Italian. It sounds like they're speaking Italian. Uh-huh. And then the whole rest of the row is college kids. So, as the movie gets going, it becomes clear that me and Suze are the only people in the entire theater who like this movie. And the college kids are giggling and making fun of the movie.
What?
Semi-audibly. I wouldn't say they were quite yelling. And so it was just enough that I could ignore them if I wanted to. Uh-huh. But they were still doing it, which sort of set the tone for the rest of the theater.
Oh, God.
So then this Italian couple next to us were commenting on the movie in Italian at, like, conversation level. So it wasn't a constant running conversation, at which point I'd like start freaking out, but it was only occasional. But the problem with occasional talker is it's that much harder to like put them on the spot, because right when you're ready to scream at them, they've like stopped. So you're like, oh, okay, well maybe they're done, and they're not done. It wasn't as bad for me as it was for Suze, because she was right next to them. She shushed them a good like 5 times.
It's tough,
man. And they're like adults. Like I actually, people my age or younger.
Uh-huh.
This is like totally my age bias, but people my age or younger, I have much more easier time being like, "Yo, shut the fuck up!" Like I can get very serious about it. But with these people were like 50 years old. I feel bad, you know. Yeah, and they're like my elders. I don't want to be like
that's the thing. About, like the
senor, signore, could you shut the tuboca or whatever it is? That was so offensive what I just did.
Dude,
that was so offensive.
That's the thing about like going to see the screeners to review for Cynadelphia and stuff.
Yeah,
because like you know they're open to the GoFobo people.
Yeah,
so then you're in there with a bunch of, like I forgot what movie it was. It was I just saw Pride, which was really good.
Yeah.
But the last one before that had a bunch of people talking in it, and this old dude was talking right in my ear, right behind me to whoever he was sitting to, and this is my move, which I feel is slightly offensive, but it's enough to get the directive across, which is I say, are you going to talk during the whole movie? Because then it makes it seem as though they have the choice in whether or not they're going to choose to talk or not, but they should probably choose not to. But the dude totally was like, so what if I am? And I was just like, we can deal with this. You don't know. I will beat the shit out of you and then come back and watch this nerdy-ass movie. Like, so we can keep talking about it or we can do something about it. But that's the move, though. You just look and you just go, are you going to keep on talking during this whole movie? Because then that way, it doesn't even seem like you're trying to tell them anything, but you really kind of are. You know what I mean? That's my move.
Here's the thing. I've done mostly a shushing, or occasionally I've done like a, oh man, the movie's on right now.
Another funny thing is you can ask if they won tickets. Did you win tickets to this? Yeah.
The last time I really got offensive with someone, I was watching a movie. It was some dramatic. I didn't even like the movie, but like a dude was talking. He was like making comments, and then the people behind him like said something to him about it, and it was pretty clear. It was an issue of, like, this dude was very aggressive, and these people were very passive-aggressive, so they didn't know how to, like, engage this guy, and this guy was, like, very much like, woo, woo, woo. So, like, right at the point where they really were starting to argue, I just leaned forward, and I was like, oh, hey, but how about you guys all shut the fuck up? I'm trying to watch a movie here. And for some reason, my more direct way, which, like, it was sheerly out of rage. Like, yeah. I just couldn't believe they were still having this... like hushed, like they were doing like the whisper argument that clearly everyone can hear you. So I was just so annoyed at both of them at this point that I just went and leaned forward. And for whatever reason, my direct thing shut the dude up. You know, this group of young people who are like, oh, could you please? He's like, so, but when I'm like, I'm trying to watch a fucking movie, he was like, all right, whatever. You know, it's very weird. It's very weird.
All I'm saying is this, people who talk and text and do phone shit and anything other than watching a movie in movie theaters, you are the epitome of entitlement, and I hate the fuck out of you.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Yeah.
That's all I'm gonna say about that.
Gone Girl, endorsement, and I had a whack time as well. And you didn't like the movie.
I didn't like the movie, but it was blissfully quiet while I viewed it.
Yeah, tomorrow that's
tonight.
That's
yeah,
fair.
So I know it's a weird yin and yang experience there with that movie.
All right, another on-track thing is that
I did Riot Fest and I finally saw The Cure for the first time in my life. And they played for 2.5 hours.
Yeah, how did you like Chicago? Amazing. Tell me a little bit about Chicago.
Chicago was awesome. We did Kuma's Corner on your suggestion, mm-hmm. and I ate the Neurosis burger. And it was awesome. We got in there, and they were playing Black Tusk. They were playing all this, like, Savannah-style sludge metal. Like, you know, like, that Relapse, like, Downtune, Kalesa, like, that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, no,
they're playing that. And there was a bunch of norms in there, which is weird. Like, a bunch of dudes with, like, dad shorts and white Reeboks on being like, these are delightful burgers. But then, like, everybody that worked there was, like, fully sleeved with, like, Venom t-shirts on. And, like, they're playing Cronenberg's The Fly on the big screen in there. It was awesome. I got to hang out with my cousin Emily and her husband Rand. That was cool. They took us out to Pequod, so we had pizza. I will say Chicago pizza, not as cool as I thought it was going to be.
Yo, that shit is whack.
That shit is wiggity whack. Not on track at all. But the Chicago hot dog is good. It's no cheese steak. I'm going to say it. And I know that you endorsed the Chicago steak sandwich. I didn't have a chance to have one because when my cousin told me to eat one, I was like, psh, girl, I'm from Philadelphia. So
I will say this, of the specific Chicagoan foods.
Yeah.
Now, side note, I don't really care for the specific city foods. I'd rather go to your city and have the best food you make now. That's not like your signature weird. Yeah. You know, I'd rather go to the fancy new joint in every city. That's just my personality. But of the Chicagoan foods, I actually found the sandwich, which I get, what's that called again?
The Chicago steak sandwich.
No, there's a name for it. It's like Italian something.
I forget.
Italian.
I oh, that's the au jus, John.
Yeah. That's the one I like. It's called the Italian drip dip. Italian, I don't know. Whatever. The Italian thing sandwich. It's like it's basically like a cheesesteak without cheese.
Whack.
Yo, no, it's so
it is
good.
Whack. That is
here's
whack.
Why. Here's why. Here's why.
All right.
Better meat. Almost every place I've had four different ones since when I was in Chicago and the Chicago area. Every one was a better cut of meat than a cheesesteak. The sauce is like next level shit. It's not just jus. It's like beyond jus. It's like, oh man, it's so good. Italian beef. That's what they call it. An Italian beef.
I got beef with that.
You got to try it. I did it grudgingly. And this is what's the thing. You hear about it less. Everyone talks about the Chicago hot dog, which is good. It's awesome. It's a fine dog.
Yeah.
And they talk about the fucking Chicago pizza, which is the worst shit.
Yeah, the worst
deep
fucking
dish pizza is bullshit.
Goddamn awful.
It's disgusting.
Like, it's quiche for jocks. It sucks. It's the worst thing. Yeah.
But people don't talk about this Italian beef enough, I think because it's so simple.
And such a simple thing.
And here's the thing. If I'm in Chicago, I don't need an Italian beef. I could be there the whole time and never fucking have one.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'd rather get Mexican food in Chicago than an Italian beef because there's such good Mexican. There's so many Mexicans in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
There's great Mexican food. Like, nice. It's really good. So I'd rather do that than get an Italian beef. But if we're doing the Chicagoan
uh-huh.
stuff, Give me an Italian beef over a deep dish pizza any fucking day.
Any fucking day. All right. So, noted. Yeah. But I went there for Riot Fest. My wife and I went there for Riot Fest. And we saw a bunch of awesome bands. Brian Yan hung out with us. Big up to my man, Brian Yan. Couple things that happened. I saw Coxbar and Stiff Little Fingers in the same day. Oh, no, not the same day, but I saw them both in that weekend, and it was awesome. I love both those bands and have loved both of those bands for a very long time. Got to see other bands. Weezer. Got to see a part of Gogol Bordello's set, which was a little bit weird. Gypsy Punks, a little weird to me.
You know, here's the thing about that band. I saw them live once for free, and I thought they were so much fun. But recorded, it just drives me crazy. Yeah, the first time I heard it, I was like, oh, I think I'm into this. And the more I listen to it, I'm like, no, fuck this shit.
The side of the line that I stand on is strictly with the World Inferno Friendship Society.
So, oh, well, of course.
It's not even a fair comparison. It's not, but I kind of feel like they're comparable bands in that, you know, they go for the theatrical circus thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, we saw them. Mastodon, amazing.
Yeah.
Standout bands for the weekend, of course, again, Coxbar, Stiff Little Fingers, but seeing Murder City Devils, still love them. Fucking awesome live show. So much fun. Wu-Tang Clan played, but Method Man wasn't there.
Wait, you saw Wu-Tang without Meth?
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know.
Now, don't get me wrong, I do think Method is the most overrated member of the Wu-Tang Clan, but he's still an essential member.
Yeah, he's an essential member. I don't think he's the most overrated.
I think he's the most overrated. I think there are MCs in the Wu-Tang Clan who are not as good as him.
Uh-huh.
But he almost exclusively gets name recognition other than Old Dirty Bastard. And no one likes Old Dirty Bastard because they think he's a good MC. They like Old Dirty Bastard because it was funny.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think Meth is as good as, say, GZA or RZA. And definitely not as good as Ghostface.
So you're going to compare Bobby Digital,
yeah,
to Tikal.
Without a doubt.
And you think Bobby Digital is better?
I will say the rhymes on Bobby Digital are better. I think Bobby Digital, the beats are not so good. But you can't compare any of those albums by beats because all the beats are just RZA anyway, except for later Ghostface stuff when he started to do his own thing. But those are all the music is the same guy. It's all RZA.
Right, there's no comparison.
You can only compare by the actual rhyme skills. And I'm talking both on their solo albums and on the Wu-Tang material. Method Man just has a cool voice. He's a bad MC.
Wow. You're going to go so far as to call him a bad MC?
Yeah. I mean, he's not. There are definitely, I think, worse people in the group, but the Wu-Tang Clan is a million dudes.
Yeah.
So it's not really even to say, like, well, he's one of the better ones in the Wu-Tang Clan. It's basically saying, like, he's one of the better ones on Staten Island.
Oh, man. This one's hard. We're coming away from something that wow.
I can't believe this is such an issue for you.
Yeah, because there's no other members of Wu-Tang are on the Biggie Smalls record on Ready to Die except for Meth.
I don't give a
fuck. And that song fucking rules that he's on there.
No, the dude, what? Method Man is whack.
Oh, my God. All right. Anyway.
I would take a guest spot from GZA or Ghostface over Method Man any day.
We're going to bring it back to what I was talking about. I saw The Cure for the first time in my 37 years of existence.
Amazing.
And it was... Here's the thing. So we got the VIP passes because we were afraid of bathroom issues at the Riot Fest.
Turns out, fair.
VIP passes horse shit because those bathrooms are fucked to begin with. There's 10,000 billion people. Then, like, there's nowhere you could go that didn't have a line for a bathroom. But with the VIP passes came 12 drink tickets for the weekend.
So you got less peeing but lots of drinking.
Well, here's the story. I didn't drink anything until that last day. We're sitting around. Me and Brian each had like – Melani accidentally had lost her tickets. But she doesn't really drink anyway, so she really didn't care all that much. Me and Brian had like 11 tickets by the Sunday. And this is supposed to be for the 3 days that we were there.
Sure.
And after seeing Andrew WK and like all these other, we saw D Antwoord, like saw a bunch of weirdo bands too that I probably never would have seen otherwise. But then we're sitting around waiting for The Cure, and there was like a 2 hour window, and I was like, "Well, what do we do?" And Brian's like, "I got all these tickets," and I was like, "I got all these tickets too." So we just drank. I drank like 11 beers in like 2 hours.
You're not a big drinker either.
No, I'm not. But I figured, let's do it. So I did. And here's the thing. There were 20,000 people, like hundreds of thousands of people. And we were up front because we wanted to be close to The Cure. Now, in a crowd, it was like a million people in this crowd. You're shoulder to shoulder with hundreds of people.
Yeah.
And then you have to pee because you drank 11 beers before the 2.5 hours set by The Cure. Not smart, I'm going to say.
Okay, that's fair.
I considered peeing on the person standing in front of me.
This is not your finest hour.
I considered dumping my Nalgene of water and then just peeing into the Nalgene, which then I would have thrown away because I'm not going to clean it. Even if I do clean it, I'm not going to drink from it ever again because I peed in it because it's just not what you
pee.
Do.
You don't pee in the pee.
I ended up holding it for the 2.5 hour set. Now, here's the thing. The Cure were playing some deep-ass cuts. They played Push, which is one of my favorite songs off of Head on the Door. They played, like, just everything, all, like, the hits from their entire career.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
By the time that was done, the egress of the hundreds of thousands of people from Humboldt Park in Chicago was awful. It was horrible. There are 10,000 people moving in every direction, and there's no way to get out of there easily. I ended up running to Burger King and peeing in the bathroom of that Burger King like a racehorse, and it was amazing. But overall, Riot Fest, Chicago, I loved both of it. It was a great time. I got a chance to hang out with Brian Yan again. Awesome dude. And we also got a chance to hang out with our friend Mark Beamer and Sarah, who do shirts for A Cure. And they were there hanging out, and it was cool to chill with them. They're old friends. And, overall, it was a really good time. So, that's my endorsement for that.
All right. Well, we've been going for a while. We still haven't gotten to our topic.
Our topic of the day.
Horror.
Halloween. Horror movies. Yes. What is the last good horror movie that you saw?
Well, so as you know,
you did Fantastic Fest.
No, totally. No, what I was going to say is, I'm doing my
31 Days of Horror.
Yeah. So, I do this a lot, let me be clear with people. For me, Halloween, I treat it like a real holiday. Mm-hmm. And I don't treat it like All Saints Day, per se, though that's fine. You know? But I really do, it means something to me in the sense of, fall is fun. Mm-hmm. You know, I like a lot of the accoutrement of fall. but it's depressing. Because I get winter depression. Like, winter is the worst. You get that
seasonal affective.
Oh, yeah. And so,
what's the worst thing? Is it that the days are shorter? Is it the night comes
the
sooner?
The whole fucking thing. Just there's the whole no cold. I'm not good with being cold. I'm good with it at first. Like, honestly, this is what's so funny about it, because December is still okay. December is like, it's painful, but the combo of it being new, the novelty of it, like, ooh, it's just getting cold. It's just getting darker, you know? Plus, Christmas. Like, I get on the Christmas train. But the reason I get on the Christmas train, you can think of Christmas as, like, you've ever been to a party and people are getting drunk and they're, like, being really loud and whatever, but you know that underneath is actually, like, not happiness, that, like, people are being so crazy because they're hiding their
deeper sadness.
Yeah, that's Christmas. Christmas is my last drunken revelry of, like, because I'm like, ha, 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 January's coming, ha, and then January is literally, like, the worst fucking thing in the world. Like, I hate it.
Really? I did not know
that. Oh, yeah, I hate it. And so, like, October is perfect as, like, Halloween month because that's me preparing. I'm watching things I love. Like, when I describe them, it almost seems like I'm describing them negatively. I'm watching celebrations of death, basically. Meditations on suffering and pain and fear.
Right.
Which I guess other people, they're like, that sounds terrible. But that sounds awesome to me because it's like I'm literally, liturgically, but maybe not religiously, if there's a distinction to be made there. Maybe not spiritually, but liturgically in the sense of preparing myself in a deep way for winter through doing Halloween. And that matters to me. And honestly, I don't know if I would give that up. Like, people have said, like, you hate winter so much, maybe you should move. I could see myself moving someplace where winters were slightly less harsh. Mm-hmm. But I do like the fall. I do like the pattern of, like, life and then decline and then death and then rebirth. And, you know, the seasonal thing is cool for me.
You don't think you could do Hawaii where
I don't think I could do Hawaii or Austin for that matter. Right, I mean, don't get me wrong. I say that. Sorry about the noise right now. It's a truck. I say that, honestly, if I could get a good job in Austin, or if Sue's got a good job in Austin, I would move to Austin. But I would say it would be difficult for me to give up seasons. I like the season thing. That was a too long thing to say. So I do a horror movie every day. Like, I've been trying to do that for years. And only last year did I go, oh, I write for a website. I should write about that. So I have this column, you know, Journal of Fear. And it's been going pretty good. So I've watched a few horror movies the last few days. And honestly, if I were going to pick one, it would be hard. A lot of them are movies I've seen before. They're not necessarily new watches. Mm-hmm. But the one I watched last night was this one called Lovely Molly. Have you ever seen this?
I've seen it on demand, but I have not watched it.
So I don't know if, you know, when, it's definitely the best one I've seen lately.
Uh-huh.
Which is hard to say because I've watched some real classics, but it's a new watch, so that's more right. exciting to me. I mean, I watched Maniac Cop 2, and I love Maniac Cop 2, but I want to say Lovely Molly because I've never seen it before. Uh-huh. I haven't seen a lot of hype around it, and I liked it. I think it's a little rough because it has a found footage-y aspect.
Which I hate.
I'm not a big fan, but it's only one part. The other parts of the movie that aren't when she has a camera are filmed in a way that's not like found footage, but it still is very handheld, so you have to be like, okay, I'm okay with a low-budgety handheld thing. There's not a lot of special effects in the movie, and it's very much like a female anxiety movie, like this woman's maybe going a little crazy, and it's not clear whether what she's going through is actually supernatural or not. So, again, the rape thing is like, you don't know if she's being raped or not. There's like if anyone's ever seen The Entity.
Yeah, there's that.
There's
weird
like a
ghost
there's
scene
a little
there.
Bit of like an entity thing going on. There's a little bit of thing like from her childhood. So it fucks with a lot of different aspects that if you are sensitive to those things, I mean, for myself, I'm a little sensitive on the childhood issue. Mm-hmm. So I was a little bit like, "Ooh, am I okay with this?" But because it seems to play it a little bit like, did this even happen? Is this a supernatural thing? What's going on?
Uh-huh.
It kind of worked for me. I thought it was interesting, at least.
Yeah.
And it's been, like I said, if you listen to the Fantastic Fest episode, the last amazing horror movie I've seen that's like so amazing it's better than anything I've seen in a long time is It Follows. Which is hard to say that because the experience of Fantastic Fest for me of people watching It Follows was like, people either loved it, like obsessed with it.
Or hated it.
Which is me. Or were nonplussed. They were like, it was fine.
Yeah.
And I think that really gets down to the scenario in the movie, the way it plays out, is for me a nightmare I've had. I've had that nightmare.
Yeah.
I've had that dream. So like I was watching it like, fuck, I might have to leave. Like, I don't know if I can watch this movie. People who don't connect with that aspect of it are like, oh, it's fine.
Yeah.
And it's not a badly made movie regardless, so I don't think anyone could pick it apart. But I think if it doesn't hit you at a deep level, it's harder to be like – people start to see the flaws. They start to go, well, this part was there. Yeah. I didn't like the way that – whereas the people who loved it weren't like, oh, I loved it, but this one thing. They were just like, oh, my God.
Right, I understand.
It's like if you hear the most killer song you've ever heard, the fact that there's a clicking noise at one point, you don't care because you're like, but I want to kill people when I hear that song. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's like that.
Yeah.
What was the last, like, amazing...
The last amazing horror movie we already discussed, and I think that would be Fool's Day.
Oh, the short film we saw at the thing, yeah.
And I haven't seen... Honestly, the horror genre as a whole, in its current state, is shit.
Wow, that's a huge statement.
Awful. There, I mean, like, as far as mainstream, I mean, I didn't go to Fantastic Fest, so I didn't get to see any of the deeper cuts, but as far as what I've been able to field and see just being casual, well, not casual, but a more ardent moviegoer, nothing has been good. Not since The Conjuring.
Wow, and a lot of people hate The Conjuring, too.
I love The Conjuring.
I thought it was good.
But, I mean, it's not the best thing I'd ever seen.
Right.
So, last night I watched Scanners for the first time.
Wow. Okay, yeah. let's get to this. How have you never seen Scanners?
I am not a Cronenberg dude. I think we've discussed this. I didn't know this.
I
like The Fly,
okay.
But I didn't like Videodrome. It's true.
Videodrome's like one of my favorite movies.
I enjoyed The Brood, but it wasn't... I didn't love The Brood.
Okay, so what about Scanners?
Scanners last night I thought was really, really fun.
Yeah.
That's a fun movie. It's
not,
definitely...
What's funny? I would watch it for a horror thing, and I don't know if it's a horror movie. It's more like a sci-fi
like
adventure movie.
Yeah, there's a head explosion in there. That's really fun. So, you know, it's a horror movie to me, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's fair.
Not like Naked Lunch. You know what I mean?
No,
like,
that's...
Naked Lunch is not a horror movie, but man, that shit is fucking terrifying.
And
I dislike that movie as well, I'm going to say.
Oh, I didn't know you disliked Naked Lunch.
No,
I like Naked Lunch. I'm a pretty big Cronenberg guy. I would say I could never rewatch Crash, which is blasphemous for a lot of people. A lot of people love Crash. And I'm talking about the Cronenberg Crash here, not the weird movie about race that sucked. But like Crash, I'm glad I saw it, but I don't think I want to go back to it.
Right.
But most other Cronenberg, I love, what's the one? Slither?
Slither. That was Cronenberg?
No. I'm thinking of the wrong...
Spider.
No. What's the one where the parasites go in your mouth and it makes you like sex crazed.
Bug?
Was that No. This is a Cronenberg movie. It's I want to say Slither, but it's like gone out of my brain. Are you looking at Cronenberg's filmography right now?
Uh-huh. Director.
It's like one of his first movies.
One of his first movies, huh? Transfer from the Drain, Stereo, Crimes of the Future, Tourette's, Letter from Michelangelo, Jim Ritchie's Sculptor. What are these?
I don't know. He did a lot of short films.
Oh, Rabid. I saw Rabid. I didn't enjoy Rabid. Fast Company, The Brood, Scanners, Videodrome, Dead Zone.
No, you definitely skipped. Go down. Start from the beginning again.
Hold on. Transfer.
No.
That's in 66. And then he goes Stereo, Crimes of the Future.
No. I like Crimes of the Future, but that's not the one I'm thinking of.
Let's see. They Came from Within.
So They Came from Within has another title. Click on They Came from Within. It has alternate titles.
Shivers.
Yeah. So, although the copy I saw it at Hearthon last year. They played it.
Yeah.
Which I'd never seen it on film, so that was amazing. Mm-hmm. And it has another one that's like the something something murders, or it's there's like three titles for that movie. I think They Came from Within is probably a better title, but yeah, I like Cronenberg. I like his newer stuff too. The only thing, for whatever reason, I still haven't made time to see Cosmopolis, which is was that his most recent one, or do you want to do one since then?
I don't know.
But yeah. So
Eastern Promises was his.
Yeah.
Okay.
History of Violence, Eastern Promises.
To Each His Own Cinema.
Keep going up. What else?
Cosmopolis, Maps of the Stars.
I didn't see Maps of the Stars either, and I hear it's good, and I want to see it. But
I liked Spider. Spider was fine.
That's funny that you like Spider.
I like Ralph Fiennes. Yeah. So you know.
So you're not a big Cronenberg. Not a big Cronenberg classic. Did you watch it on? Did you stream it?
I watched on video on demand last night.
Okay. I really want to get, you know, so it's on Hulu Plus because it's Criterion.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, they just put out a Criterion of it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Huh. So, well, okay. I'm just saying, I saw Scanners last night. It was really fun.
Yeah.
Not so much a Cronenberg fan, but I enjoyed the movie. But it definitely got me thinking, like, what is it about this genre that we enjoy?
And we talked about this a little bit last year for my column.
Not even just the genre, though. Just going a little bit further, what is it about being afraid that we enjoy? Last week, I did Eastern State Penitentiary with my wife, Milani, and with Ivo Tomas and Bruce Park and Bruce's friend, Kate, I think her name was. I just met her at that time. I didn't really have a chance to talk to her.
Is this Bruce Park's friend?
It's his homegirl. I don't know if it's his homegirl, but it's his homegirl. But all I know is I didn't get a chance to talk to her because I was screaming my balls off. I was fucking terrified. There are a couple moments.
Haunted houses really get to you.
Yeah, they do. And here's the thing. Here's why. It's a conscious decision. And the conscious decision is this. We're walking through. Milani is adorable, as you all know, and I love her very dearly. And her funny thing that she was doing was when people were jumping out at her, there's this 9-foot devil guy that jumped out at us. Now, if you're 9 feet tall already, you're not going to be jumping out at someone. But if you can jump out at somebody and be 9 feet tall, I'm shitting my pants. And that's what's happening, okay? I'm going to pee on something. I'm going to probably release my bowels and then run screaming. Milani goes, hello, like all sweet and kind, because that is who she is. And she was like, you know, you get really scared at these things. Here's why. Because you're paying money to be fucking scared.
Right.
I'm not going in there to try and out-snark some dude who's acting for the season. I'm getting in there to get my money's worth of being freaked out.
Well, and I don't want to go down on this tangent too hard, but this is what bothers me about ironic movie watchers.
Yeah.
There are some movies that you can watch and they're bad. Like, I'm not against watching movies because they're bad. I've seen The Room and I enjoyed it.
Right.
So clearly, I watch movies sometimes because they're bad. But this ironic movie watching thing where people will go into movies that are legitimately fucking scary or legitimately fucking good, whatever you want to say, and they're just like, meh, the whole time just laughing.
It's like, what's the point?
Yeah, why did you come here? Yeah, you came to this movie just so you could mock what was going on? Now, don't get me wrong. I do think in the scary haunted house scenario, I sometimes do that as a defense mechanism because I'm actually terrified. I'm like, the only way I can get out of this situation is to pretend like this is all bullshit. But I would never do that in a movie because, like, this is getting into a little bit of what you're saying. I enjoy haunted houses. I've done them.
Yeah.
You know,
we love them.
I definitely appreciate horror cinema more.
Yes.
But let's go to the scared thing. Because I don't know that I only like horror because of being scared. So I want to talk about that
too.
But as far as when I like a movie when it actually scares me. So Grace's thing is It Follows doesn't scare me the way that like jump scares scare me.
Right.
You could put a jump scare in a romantic comedy and I'm going to jump.
Yeah.
A jump scare is getting me every time, jump which is weird for a horror fan.
Jump scares and but jump
they're
cuts.
Yeah, that's the thing. The jump cuts, whatever it is, like when it's like, bam, it's right there. It always gets me, but I hate it because it's just manipulation.
It's weak.
But I mean, like, actually being a scare, like actually being afraid, like It Follows actually fucked with me.
Yeah.
So why do I like that? I feel safe.
Uh-huh.
I don't think anything's going to happen to me, even if I'm really scared. I'm not really scared. I'm not really scared. I'm not scared the way I've been for my life.
Right.
You know, I to put it this way, I've been more afraid at certain hardcore shows than I have in any movie ever.
Right.
But that's because the hardcore show is more real. Like, I'm actually going to get punched in the face right now.
Yeah.
And what's in the movie is more like a visceral, like, oh.
Yeah.
But
it's a conceptual horror.
So I think when it comes to the fear question, I think that's complicated. That's a complicated, both psychological and philosophical, though I'm not convinced those are actually that separate of things. But the idea is, like, the most obvious response is, like, a release.
Uh-huh.
You know, you have anxieties already. So living out safe anxieties in a movie sort of releases that for you. I think that's a little bit of a cheap, simplistic answer, but right. I don't. That doesn't make it not true.
Right,
just doesn't
right.
make it universally true. It's just one aspect.
One aspect.
I think another thing is like the thrill of it, like a roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
Although that doesn't really answer anything. Like I was watching a documentary once where someone said, "Everyone always says that it's like a roller coaster ride." Okay, well, why do we do a roller coaster ride? There's nothing less scary. Like, hey, we're going to put you in a thing where the whole time it's going to physically feel like you're going to die, but then we've really gone out of the way to make sure – well, hopefully we've really gone out of the way to make sure
that you're not
going to die. Gonna
die.
Yeah. That's a little strange that we like that. So, again,
so
I don't
know.
So
then just for you, what is it? Like, for me, I love the feeling of – watching a movie and then just feeling like my breathing rate increases, I get tense, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love that feeling of manipulating my inner atmosphere through a movie.
Huh.
Like, I can never forget the first time I saw Halloween.
Yeah.
Dude, the first time I saw Halloween, it was terrifying to me. I was so scared because it looked like Haddonfield, New Jersey, even though they say it isn't. I still think it is. But I mean, like...
It's not.
I know it's not, but in my mind, you know, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, man, that's right down the street from me. Fucking scary, dude. The scene when Michael Myers stabs a dude in the kitchen and pins him to the wall.
And then he looks at him.
Oh, my God.
He, like, thinks about it. He's like, he, like, looks at it like, huh.
Yeah, and it's just that weird, quiet moment when the dude's dead and stuck to a wall. That precise moment, to me, epitomizes everything. Everything that I love about horror movies.
I feel that way, and I've gotten some pushback because we did it for 2 cents. But Texas Chainsaw Massacre,
right?
Still effective.
Still scary.
Still, when he comes out and he hits that like the way, if you read the 2 cents about Texas Chainsaw, my friend Victor said, like, this is the sound of fear. It's not the shrieking or the, you know, there's all these like dramatic, it's the no music. You just hear the wet thump, just the
boom,
and then dragged away. That's the most frightening fucking thing in the world.
It's so scary. It's so good. It's so good, though.
But
it's so good.
I mean, because here's the thing. So let's start at the personal response to fear.
Right.
It is exhilarating. There is something fun about it, like feeling afraid and surviving. I think there's an artistry to it, you know? I do think there's a release. So I think that's all there. I just feel like there's something more that I don't understand, and I'm okay with that.
Right.
I don't totally know why. I mean, I think there's a nostalgia. We both grew up with it.
Yeah, we both grew up watching horror movies, and that's a shout out to my Uncle Rudy
for
letting me watch all these awesome horror movies, because my parents never let me watch that stuff.
Yeah, and shout out to my stepdad, George. George has been really important in my life for a long, long time. Great guy. But specifically him and one of his sons, who I don't know which one, thought it was okay for me to watch Nightmare on Elm Street when I was in second grade.
So good.
And it's like warped me ever since. And man. I can't tell if they think that's awesome or if they feel bad about that now, but I think they should feel good about it. So I'll put that out there. But yeah, no. Like, I think there is that aspect of it is like, that's something we're used to.
Yeah.
It's something that we appreciate and
what
we
was
see
the, first,
the art.
Was that the first moment that you were like, Nightmare on Elm Street 2? That was like, the first moment when you saw the artistry of horror, or just the first horror you're exposed to?
No, I mean, Nightmare on Elm Street. I think it was the first Nightmare on Elm Street. I don't think it was two, but I was in second grade.
Right.
But I think it was the original Nightmare on Elm Street.
No, but I'm saying, was that the first time that you saw a horror movie and you're like, I can
So that was the first horror movie I saw, period. But, you know, it's hard to say. I don't think my initial attraction to horror was the artistry. And I don't know that even though I think creating a fear response is art, like being able to craft a movie that is terrifying in a variety of ways. There's like the terrifying in the sort of tense way. There's also the deeply unsettling, creepy, whatever. I don't know that any of that is why I was attracted to horror per se, because I think I was too young to appreciate that, which is obvious by the fact that I've seen Friday the 13th Part 6 multiple times.
Wow.
Like, clearly you don't watch that movie for the art. Yeah. I loved it when I was a kid. I loved... Some of the movies I loved when I was a kid were good, and some of them were bad. And I'm just going to own that, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But I do think at a certain point you start to realize, too, part of the art of the horror movie is how it's able to tap into anxieties you have at, like, a deeper artistic level. And I think, like, cultural anxieties. Like, I really do... Again, I'm not saying that horror is a direct one-to-one relationship with our social fears. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's true. It's not about, I'm nervous about the Vietnam War, so I'm going to make Last House on the Left.
Right.
But the fact that many of these filmmakers will go back and go, wow, it's weird how my movie kind of reflects that, because I didn't decide to do that. Like, The perfect example to me is the Night of the Living Dead.
Right.
People all the time are like, George Romero made that because of race stuff.
Yeah.
But if you really look at what he says, he made it to make a fucked up horror movie. That was all he wanted to do.
Yeah.
Even casting an African American dude, total coincidence. Like, that wasn't the plan. It was, and he even says he didn't see that angle of it till he was driving the movie to a screening the night of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. And so he was thinking about that's on his mind. And he's watching the movie, and especially the end, and he's like, oh, shit. Like, This is what I did. Yeah. And to me, great art is often like that. Not that there's no value to propaganda. You know, I have a point. I'm going to make my point. A lot of artists will say, well, that's just bad art. And I don't think that that's true. I think you can do propaganda art, and it works. But some of the greatest art, you don't know what you fucking made. Yeah. You don't know what your movie is. You don't know what until people see it. And you see it again, and then you go, man, this was going on with me. Like, this was there, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, not every horror movie I love gets to some visceral, deep, social whatever. I mean, again, Maniac Cop 2.
Awesome movie.
I will argue maybe Maniac Cop is influenced by the fact that if you grew up in New York and
brutality in the 80s.
Yeah. I mean, let's be clear. Like, if you aren't pro-cop and you grew up in New York, you're probably anti-cop. I mean, those are – you have to choose sides. They're not neutral.
It's true. Especially at that time.
Especially during
the 80s, yeah.
And what's going on right now. I mean, this is what I would love to do. I'd love to sit down with a lot of this young generation – angry about Ferguson and whatever, and watch The Bad Lieutenant, and watch Maniac Cop, and watch...
Right.
Not that any of these movies are like, oh, they're so... Abel Ferrara is so deep. That's not my point, but that they get an anxiety then that I think is becoming present again, where we're realizing, like, oh, some of these guys just want to shoot people. That's weird. Was it why we gave you money to just shoot people? Yeah. That's weird.
No, but I think that horror is the easiest movie genre to manipulate in that manner, though. Because, again, it does speak to such human... Like, honestly, what other primal instincts do we have beyond fear that are so nascent in our everyday life? What other things, like... I mean, I get it, love stories and all that stuff. But, I mean, come on. Like, the consciousness of people today is often on, like, the future and the uncertainty and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And that fear is directly related to what comes out in horror movies.
So
specifically,
if you're trying to, let's say you're trying to communicate with someone what it is about horror that like really affects you, that you're like, this is something I put my time into and I feel like it's worth it. I'm glad that I spend the time to watch these movies. How would you do that? Like how do you get it? I mean, we've talked a little bit about fear, but what is it about horror overall? What appeals to you? And again, I don't know that either one of us are super artsy critic types, but I think we appreciate the stuff enough. And I know for yourself, I think you have, you know, you think about what you're watching enough that, what is it about horror that has value for you?
What, horror to me is like the ultimate punk rock. It is. I mean, consider like movies by like Lucio Fulci that ignore all types of rules in terms of lighting and filming and everything else. It is a movie made for that movie's sake. You understand? Like, if you watch The Beyond as a movie, as a linear story, makes absolutely no fucking sense whatsoever.
No, I mean, it's a little weird.
It's a weird sense that happens, but I mean, like, that's the whole thing. Like, okay, you're gonna say, like, yeah, it's kind of weird, but the whole thing is fucking weird because that's exactly what it is.
Well,
and I don't think that Fulci made these movies thinking about like a critical response. I think he made them because he knows what he likes and he knows what he wants to see coming from this huge tradition of Italian horror.
Well, and I think Fulci has his own cinematic language. Like, if someone's only seen, like, let's say you've only seen The Beyond, or you've only seen Zombie, or you've only seen one of his movies,
right,
then chances are you're like, I don't know, I liked it, but there were parts that didn't make sense. I mean, I think Zombie translates more than The Beyond or than some of his other movies. But I think he's created a cinematic language in a way that if you delve into Fulci movies and you get it, he clicks for you, then it becomes easier to then look at other movies and say, like, well, what's like, going on here? What am I supposed to get from this? And if you're watching, I mean, this is the thing. Like, I can appreciate a movie that's, like, purely about plot or, you know, I'm really captivated by the story. That's fine. But sometimes you have to realize that's not what film is, per se. Like, that what you're seeing is more than just telling a story.
Yeah, it's that emotional response. It's that manipulation of that inner atmosphere, and I love it. I do.
Yeah.
You know what? The first time I realized that I love this, I don't know if we discussed this before, but it was the extended cut of the Michael Jackson Thriller video.
The Michael Jackson Thriller video,
the extended cut, the John Landis one.
Yeah.
Like, not only with all like the background stuff, but with like the big zombie sequence in the middle and like the whole movie sequence in the beginning. That was the first time that I was like, yo, this shit is off the chains and I'm going to love this for the rest of my fucking life. Like, that was my gateway. Because right after that, American Werewolf in London for me. Yeah. Right? And then I saw that shit and I was like, holy shit, this shit is scary. See you next Wednesday. Like, all that shit. Or I forget what. Anyway, that's all in there. And the John Landis stuff. And then after that, it was Ghostbusters. You know what I mean? Gremlins, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But Michael Jackson's Thriller video was the first one for me. And I saw it before Halloween, like on an October. I remember someone gave me the videotape, and I was young as shit, and I shouldn't have had it, but I did. And they were like, oh, it's Michael Jackson. I think, like, Uncle Rudy gave it to me. It was like, your son likes Michael Jackson. Let's watch Michael Jackson video. And, like, I was like, oh, man, this shit's great. And not realizing that that would be... That is the patient zero of horror movies for me. Like, that was what started the infection that's carried me through the rest of my life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just funny. Like, I remember watching it, and I watched it with my brother and Bad Michael, Uncle Rudy's son, who's, like, been my lifelong friend. And they were scared of it. They were like, oh, man, the guy's arm fell off. Like, and it's Michael Jackson dancing. You know what I mean? But they were definitely shook. And I just remember being like, man, this is the thing that I love, and these dudes, who are like my dudes, they love it, but they don't love it for the same reason that I do. Like, they love Michael Jackson, et cetera, et cetera. But I love, and ever since then, even the whole zombie trope, still love it! Still love it, directly related to that experience of watching Michael Jackson's Thriller. So, for me,
It's interesting. I don't know. I might be reaching my end on zombies, which is weird.
Which is fine.
Because Night of the Living Dead was the first horror movie that lived at my house.
Right.
Like, you know, like I rented stuff a lot. I saw a few things. The first movie that I could watch over and over and over again was Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
And then when I finally saw Dawn of the Dead was the first movie I bought a t-shirt for.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. It was the first movie where I thought, I'm going to get the special box set. They have a box with three versions of the movie. I need all three of those versions. Like, I was obsessed with Dawn of the Dead.
Really?
I don't know if I still care about zombies as much because I do feel like it's been beaten to the ground. But that doesn't make Dawn of the Dead less good.
Yeah.
See, I think it's weird when people are like, I'm sick of zombies. How can that make you like Dawn of the Dead less? It's amazing. Yeah, no. How can it make you like zombie Or Endless. Zombie 2, technically.
Or Night of the Creeps. Come on.
No.
Night of the Creeps is a genius movie, and it always will be. I will always love that fucking movie. And that's another horror one that I'm just like, oh, man.
I think what you were saying before, though, really connects for me at a very deep level, which is the through horror, you can get at things that are harder to get at.
Yeah.
That actually making a drama that deals with some of these trauma things is actually more difficult. That with horror, you can get at stuff that's difficult to do, but you can get at it in a roundabout way. And you may remember last Halloween, I was thinking about this a lot. And we talked about it at the scary thing we went to. We went
at Pennhurst.
We went to the Pennhurst,
which we endorse highly.
Yeah, we went to the Pennhurst like haunted insane asylum thing.
It's an abandoned insane asylum that they turned into a haunted house.
It's crazy. Partially.
The other part they just left untouched with all the like stuff there.
Yeah,
and it fucking sucks. You walk through it and it sucks. It's terrifying.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
But anyway.
So, anyways, we there. I was talking a lot because that's when That was last year. Was the first time I did this Journal of Fear thing, and I was like thinking about it a lot more. I think this year, the Journal of Fear, it's like I'm having to work a little bit harder to get at some stuff because I don't have it on my brain. Mm-hmm. Been very distracted by like not having a job, so thinking deeply about horror movies hasn't really been connecting for me.
Right.
But last year, you know, I was like, okay, I don't have a job, but like I'm really focused on getting this journal thing done. I'm really stoked on it. And I was thinking a lot about a movie you'll remember called Deadly Blessings, early Wes Craven movie.
Right.
And in it, you know, people may or may not know, Wes Craven grew up in a very restrictive religious household. Mm-hmm. I think he's been working through a lot of those religious themes in all of his movies, actually.
Yeah,
even from what I understand, his sexy porno movies that I've never seen. But you know, the ones that Wes Craven movies I've seen, I think he's working through some of these things from his childhood. Deadly Blessings is the most obvious to me because what Deadly Blessings is ambiguous about is its genre. Mm-hmm. The whole movie, it's unclear whether what's going on is a slasher movie or a supernatural film. And it has a religious community in it. The religious community is like a knockoff of like Amish community. They call themselves the Hittites. They're like more conservative than Amish. And there's this whole like witchcraft angle. And there's this whole like, it's very common in these supernatural movies that you have a modern character who's like, this is all bullshit. Yeah. And then the anxiety the movie puts in is, maybe it's not bullshit. And I think that's getting at something very raw in the modern human, which is we want to turn our back on our supernatural past, our superstitious past. We see a history of superstition, of cave-dwelling people. And this is actually a much more an issue for westernized people because, you know, Western is, of course, a euphemism for white European.
Yeah.
And that even those of us like me and Josh, who are people of color, what makes us westernized people of color is the amount to which we are white, really. Right. Or European-ish, you know. And that's – you can say that white in like an American sense, racially, but it's also more of like a colonial European. I'm getting very – complicated to say something here, but what I'm trying to say is I think the anxiety of the westernized person is this fear that modernity isn't true, that we at some level, even with our cars and our science or whatever,
worship the false idol,
we're still living in the cave. We're still in the fucking cave picking. And I think that's actually at base part of racism. A lot of what white people in their racism say about people of color are all the anxieties they have about Europe. You're so this. You know, like they went to cultures and said, you're so backwards. Meanwhile, the cultures they encountered were far more advanced. I mean, best example, Cortez and the Aztecs. The Aztecs had shit the Spanish hadn't fucking figured out yet. But the whole point is that, oh, they're backwards, you know.
Yeah.
They're like animals. And it's like, no, it's because you think you're like animals and you're fucked up about it.
Yeah.
I think that still happens in these movies. And I know I'm overcomplicating Deadly Blessings, which is a very simple movie. But what I found really fascinating about Deadly Blessing was not just that religious aspect, which I think is what's going on, is we've abandoned religion and now we are scared maybe that we shouldn't have. But even more, we're scared that we didn't really. That even though we're so modern, underneath all that modernity is this, still this basic, still superstitious, irrational thing. What's even more interesting about Deadly Blessing is that by not resolving the genre, it puts that into question even more.
Yeah.
It's like Wes Craven, I think, dealing with his own religiosity. Because I hate to ruin this movie for you, but I'm going to. it ends with you thinking it was a slasher movie all along. There's no supernatural, whatever, until a final stinger. And everyone writes off the final stinger as bullshit. The demon pops out and they're like, bullshit. That's just him fucking with the audience. No, it's his living out, I think, his last anxiety of, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I won't find out that my parents were right and I've been wrong until the end. And I think that's amazing. Now, doesn't make Deadly Buses an amazing movie. Yeah,
definitely not.
Ernest Borgnine has done some crazy ass shit, and he kind of makes it worth it.
Yeah, that's my
We just did, for 2 cents, we just did The Devil's Reign, which is another Borgnine, William Shatner movie. but still, Deadly Buses, we're checking out for that reason. I think because, and this is what I think about horror, horror treads an ambiguous place where we can deal with real ass shit without having to say we're dealing with real ass shit. If you go to a drama, and in the drama, we're dealing with death and suffering. You have to say,
we're dealing
hey, everybody, guess what? We're dealing with real ass shit. In a horror movie, you can have a fun ass, crazy ass, goofy, shitty movie, and underneath be like, oh, and it helped me deal with some real shit that I was thinking about.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's the only genre that does that.
It feels like that to me. Someone's going to say we're wrong, but that's how I feel.
You know, I honestly can't think of connecting to any other genre of film.
Yeah.
That does that for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, dude, no other film approaches those type of personal issues.
And for me personally, it can, that's why what's great about horror is it can expand. Like, you could be at a film fest, a horror-thon. We're going to go to a horror-thon soon. We're going to talk about that in a sec. And you could be at a horror-thon that played Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
And you could be at a horror-thon that played Antichrist.
Right.
In the same thing. Talk about two fucking wildly different movies, yeah. Oh god, like whatever. But it's like horror can be a fun, gory, silly, mm-hmm. we all know this isn't real, or it can be like a fuck you, man. Like I'm getting at that scary thing inside you and I'm poking it. I'm poking it.
Comparing Tale of Two Sisters horror to like to brain damage or like
oh god, yeah.
Yeah. You know what
yo,
I mean?
Like, yo, fuck the Japanese. No, I'm kidding. I love you, Japanese people, but your horror
movie, yeah.
fucks. Oh, is Tale of Two Sisters Korean?
Tale of Two Sisters
Korean. Oh, my bad.
Still.
I have more of so. Oh, yeah. Okay. So I like Korean horror, but Japanese horror really fucks my shit up.
K-horror, though, I think is the future. I mean, like, dude.
Yeah. Well, there hasn't been something for me awesome from Japan for a while.
Not since the first Ju-on, in my mind.
No, there's definitely been something since then. I feel like it. I'll have to look up. I haven't done as much research as I want. But I will say, no, because it's hard. Like, some of probably the most fucked up Asian movies don't necessarily get released here. So yeah, I miss out on stuff.
There's
and, like, I should be reading, like, Twitch or some of these more international film websites to keep up with those things, but I don't.
Yeah.
So, like, I see a Korean horror movie because it's on Netflix. Like, it's, you know, we used to in Philly, and we're going to talk about Hearthon in a sec, but we used to in Philly at the Philly Film Fest had the Danger After Dark section.
Which was amazing.
That was amazing.
That was how I saw Tale of Two Sisters for the first time.
That was how I saw Sympathy for Lady Vengeance.
That's how I saw The Grudge. Ju-on. The first time I saw Ju-on was at the Prince through them.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Yeah,
we don't have that anymore.
No,
not
so
a thing anymore.
We gotta find it on home video, and it's a real bummer.
It sucks.
Yeah. Okay. So we talked a lot. Here's the thing: we could do multiple episodes.
We could go hours and hours.
I feel like we should talk about more. I will say this: right now, you know, it's October.
Uh-huh.
You're watching horror movies like I am.
Yeah.
If you were like, I'm gonna go for a classic. I'm gonna go for one that hits the spot. That's like the horror movie for me in October that I want to see. That's really gonna scratch my itch. What's it gonna be?
What's it gonna be, indeed? I don't know. I don't know what the one. It might be Night of the Creeps because that has everything in it for me. It has, you know, has the cops. It has frat boys getting killed by slugs. It's got a dude getting the girl. It's got friendship. It's everything. But you know what though? If I had to say the one feels the most Halloween-y movie for me, I'm gonna go with The Reanimator.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. H.P. Lovecraft movie, right? Directed by Brian Yuzna, starring Jeffrey Combs. I mean, everybody knows it. It's one of the greatest horror movies ever made.
Yeah.
But it's so geeky, and it's so fun, and Jeffrey Combs is so diabolical in it as Dr. Herbert West, that movie just, dude, that movie from front to back, to me, epitomizes the whole feeling of fall, they're in college, you know what I mean? Like, that whole, it's got a new start feeling to it, But then it goes so off the wall wacky that you watch it and you're just like, I'm really fucked up by this movie. Yeah. And it's really fun.
Yeah.
So that's my pick of the season. Like,
cool.
If I were to watch any one movie and have that be my Halloween movie, it would be the first Reanimator. It's so good.
It's hard because my inclination is always to go, like I just said, I'm kind of tired of them, but, you know.
Zombies
movies were like the shit for me. And so, like, I do watch Dawn of the Dead a good deal or Zombie or whatever. Or my other inclination is to go, and it's so obvious, it hurts to even say out loud, but Halloween is so key for me.
Good.
It's so, like, John Carpenter is still one of my favorite directors, despite having seen that movie that was really shitty he put out.
The War?
It's still one of my, I hate that movie.
That movie's terrible.
But I still love him. So, you know, Halloween is a classic, you know, it's, you know, or The Thing. Those are the two.
Oh, The Thing.
For me, fuck. John Carpenter horror movies that I'm, like, really into. I think it's hard if I'm with, you know, my wife doesn't do horror, so it would be hard to say if she was like, okay, I'll do one horror movie with you. Uh-huh. I think it would probably be Halloween. I think it's so classic, and I think it's so subtle and scratches
wonderful.
The itch. You know what I mean? Like, it really gets at it. But honestly, a horror movie that I've seen many times, it's very familiar to me. But I haven't watched it in a long time, so I might go to it, and I'm thinking about going to it, and you're going to laugh, because we've been saying very classic movies, and this is not a classic movie. Candyman.
Really?
When I was a kid, I was so stoked on that movie.
Were you?
And I know it's not good. Like, people have said, that movie sucks. But I haven't watched it in a decade, and I really want to go back to it.
Virginia Madsen sucks in that movie. She's
I know.
She's almost as bad as the mom in Nightmare from Elm Street.
Nightmare I mean, so this week for Journal, I've done Severance. I've done Schizo.
Schizo I haven't seen in a while.
I've done Lovely Molly, mm-hmm. which we talked about. And then tonight I'm doing Fall of the House of Usher.
Oh, Vincent Price.
Yeah. That was great. And then I think I'm doing, I haven't looked at my list, but I think then it's Funhouse.
Funhouse is awesome.
The Mutilator.
Didn't see the music.
And I think Exorcist 3, maybe? I don't know. I'll have to look at what
Which
I posted.
Which Exorcist? The one with George C. Scott in it?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Have you seen that one?
So I haven't seen it in a long time. I saw it a long time ago.
That one is so good.
Yeah. It has that insane scene with the
fucking scissors and all that shit.
Holy shit,
dude. The scene when the nun is walking through the church.
Right.
And then the thing comes up behind her.
No, it's in a hospital.
Oh, in the hospital with all the blood.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, dude. That gave me nightmares for, like, years.
So here's the thing. I first saw it when I was a kid, I wasn't as stoked on it, though it scared me. Because I was like, oh, this isn't, like, classic Exorcist. I mean, I was, like, 13, 14. Yeah. You know, so what the fuck did I know?
Yeah.
I rewatched it again in college and was like, this movie's fucking amazing.
And then I haven't
seen it in a long time. So I'm really stoked. But I don't know if that's this week. I think there might be something else this week. So if you follow me on Twitter, at Liam Rules, RULZ, I post each week what I'm doing for Journal of Fear. And I post it in a way that's like, you can follow along. But I'll be straight up for real. I have to go back and look at it because I'll forget.
Right.
And like, it's I set myself a schedule because I'm trying to
be pragmatic about this.
Yeah, like I want to do new stuff that I haven't seen before. Which isn't exclusively, like, I definitely am into rewatches, but I also want to make sure I'm doing some new stuff. Oh, so this is a very pragmatic one. I'm doing one that I got on Blu-ray for cheap. Got it for like $5 on Blu-ray.
Uh-huh.
And I just haven't watched it yet, but I remember liking it. Poltergeist 2.
Great movie.
Yeah.
Great movie.
I loved it as a kid. I watched it recently, part of it. It was on TV, and I was somewhere, and I watched it, and I was like, oh, yeah, I really like this. But I haven't sat through the whole thing for a long time. So I think I'm going to do that this week.
Good movie.
And then next week, I'm trying to work in Pin.
Not seen Pin.
Yeah, it's been recommended to me. I'm trying to work in Peeping Tom was recommended to me. I'm trying to work in a movie called Society. And on Blu-ray, I have a copy of The Battery that Ed Travis sent to me that I want to watch.
So good. Have you seen that yet?
No, I haven't seen
that. That movie fucking rules.
Really?
That movie is... I saw it around the same time I saw Blue Ruin.
Okay.
And it has the same indie feel to it. It's a zombie movie, as you know.
Yeah.
But it's so well done.
Yeah, Ed just reviewed it for the site. I think he used the word hipster in the title.
It's very, which is really regrettable. I mean, there's like a bunch of like music sequences in there that you're like, I get it. Like, this is wherever they're from. It's the cool bands from that town.
Yeah, so, but hipster, that's not a real thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're not going to discuss hipster right now. Let's wrap up, though,
because we're going to do the our stuff for Stroke Time, which I think, I mean, we mentioned Cox Bar, but there's something coming up very soon that we're both going to that we're really excited about.
We're going to the 24-hour Exhumed Horror Marathon. Yes! It's now, the best part of every year, typically. Last year, I popped both of my bicycle tires on my way there. And I sat on a huge bag of smart food popcorn that exploded.
You exploded it.
I was so bummed. And still the best time of the whole season last year.
Oh, it's so good.
Still amazing.
So for you, we've talked about Exhumed before, but in case we have new listeners, Exhumed is an organization out of Philly, or the Philly area. They mostly live in like Jersey and stuff. But they've been showing movies now for, what, 16 years?
Yes, close to 20 years.
So they've been doing, and it's all 35mm, 16mm.
Yeah. Obscure genre film.
Yeah, it's like they really started out just like horror nerds. Like, we're going to do a horror movie. Yeah. And now they've expanded. Part of that expansion is one guy in the group is a collector. And when we say he collects prints, if you live, like I know for a fact, let's say you live in Austin.
Yeah.
It's one of the coolest cities in the world. Some of the prints that you've seen at the Alamo are Harry's prints.
That's so
literally
insane.
You've gone and paid money in a movie theater to see a print that lives in a garage or in a basement in Jersey.
Yeah, that's
like
amazing.
That's the level of these guys. Now, granted, they don't hype themselves up. They're not a huge organization. They're not like a we're so fucking big deal. Pay attention. Yeah. But this horror-thon is like the shit.
It's
24
the
hours, and
time.
We have no idea what we're going to see.
And they don't tell you what you're going to see beforehand. You just got to wait until they start. I went to the very first one, and they opened with Halloween. Now, you can imagine, you know, this is your first time you're going to be watching movies for 24 hours straight, and the first thing you see is that pumpkin, and then, you know, the opening sequence of, through the mask, and then, like, you know, the girl gets stabbed, and then they take the mask off, and then the pumpkin. Ah, it's so cool. It is the coolest shit. I never felt cooler than during a Halloween season ever in my life until that point. Like, I felt so awesome at that point.
Yeah, I think we're really stoked. We hear that it should be a good lineup this year.
Yeah, yeah.
Some classic stuff.
And they never show anything twice.
No, I mean, I think they're doing some stuff that they haven't done at the Horrorthon before, but they've done other repertory screenings of, which is good. I felt like last year, some of the more obscure stuff I didn't love. I mean, this is the thing. You're buying in. You're going to have a lot of fun. But you know,
you might see something that you don't
like. You might
like.
See something you're not a fan of. And that's just what you put up with. You don't know what's going to come
Which
at you.
Fun.
And it's worth taking a chance on movies you don't know about. Because what if it's something amazing? Like, I've definitely seen things there that I never heard of. Like, one of the movies I saw that some people hated, but I thought was great, is a movie called Flesh Eater.
Yeah, that movie's great.
Yeah, yeah. It's so basically the guy who played the first zombie in Night of the Living Dead, he just decided he could make his own zombie movie. So he made this horrible low-budget zombie movie called Flesh Eater, or Revenge of the Zombies, or Revenge of the Living Dead.
Flesh Eater.
But no, but there's multiple titles.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in it, he guess what? He plays a zombie. He wears the same fucking suit he wore in Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
But it's like more of like a satanic zombie or something.
Yeah, it's terrible.
He gropes multiple actresses that he's supposed to be eating, but instead he's, like, groping their boobs.
Yeah, yeah,
it's, like, low budget. The acting is terrible. This all sounds like not endorsements, but it's one of those movies that's, like, so fun because it's so ridiculous.
So terrible. But then they also have bad movies. That they showed Tintoretto last year with Hugo Stieglitz.
Yeah.
The one, and they're killing actual sharks in this fucking movie.
God,
abysmal movie. Terrible. And then Equinox, which divided the crowd. That one's like a weirdo that they screened one. Like, you're not going to like everyone, but you are going to.
Well, but they did do Night of a Thousand Cats one year. That was the best fucking thing ever.
Yeah, they did. What else? They did American Werewolf in London. They did Blackula. Like,
Last year, though, was the sorority. What was that sorority house movie? I really liked it, actually.
I thought it was great.
The only thing they did last year that actually made me upset was they did the Alice Cooper movie. There's an Alice Cooper concert movie.
Welcome to My Nightmare.
That's like banned because he spends a lot of the movie like hitting women, and then he got the memo that was maybe not cool. So then he like disavows the movie like it didn't happen, which of course it did happen
because they had the print of it on 35mm.
Yeah, but here's the thing: I don't like Alice Cooper, so I was just like,
I mean, if it was like an Ink and Dagger video that was a concert footage of like 2 hours, I'd be into it. But.
And I'm sure some people that's a bummer. They're like, oh, Horrorthon had some movies I didn't like. For us, I didn't care. Like, we went and did other. We went and got food and come back.
Yeah, dude.
Here's the thing: the movies start rolling at 11 a.m. and they go to like 11 a.m. or noon the next day.
And
so you can take a break.
Your friends, you're hanging out.
dude. The only thing that would make this thing cooler is if we had an Alamo and it was in the Alamo, because then I would just order food in the theater. I would never leave. I'd be like, oh, this movie sucks. I'm going to order some food.
It's and I would just chicken eat. Figures.
Yeah.
But thankfully, there's a Wawa across the street from the IHOP.
Yeah, and they,
so
they've
good.
Been getting, recent years, they've been getting food trucks to come out.
Oh,
so that's pretty sweet, too.
Sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're hoping for that again. And then our boy
Dog, if you're listening.
Yeah, Poi Dog.
Marathon.
Poi Dog, you better actually show up this year.
Please.
If you're coming.
I love you, Poi Dog, but go on.
I love that food.
I want some
And our boy Justin Miller, Haunt Love, check his out, his Etsy, Haunt Love. He'll do posters for it. Yeah. He has some great prints. So, anyways, that's the thing. Is there anything else you wanted to mention and you were hyped on?
The American Film Institute in Maryland is screening a 70mm print of 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
To which me and Melanie got tickets to.
And then I'm trying to go see... Do you want to go to New York to see the 70mm of Interstellar?
Yes.
Oh, they have it at King of Prussia, rather. You want to go to King of Prussia?
Oh, yeah. I'll go anywhere to see that movie.
Yeah, so
that looks
go to the
amazing.
Interstellar website. If you don't know about this, Interstellar is going to be screening, as well as on digital, in some places on 70mm and 35mm. You might not have a 70mm near you, depending on where you are in the country. Still, then go to the 35mm. Like, it's worth
be amazing.
Supporting film.
Christopher Nolan, dude, McConaughey, if you're a listener to the podcast, you know that I've been infatuated with McConaughey.
One of those infatuations that was worth hanging. Your infatuation is sort of like Sunday Real Estate fans. Like, people were obsessed with Sunday Real Estate, and then they went away. And then they were still obsessed, and you're like, why are you still obsessed with that band? Then they got back together, put on an album, and it was still good.
Yeah,
and you're like,
awesome.
Your obsession panned out. Same thing with McConaughey.
Again,
you were obsessed with him when he was embarrassing.
It's true.
Now all of a sudden, he's back on top, and you're
and
like, I was
behold,
right.
Still there. I still imagine him waking up every morning just being like, McConaughey! Like, that's what I imagine he does every day.
Because
that's what I would do if I was him every
day. Here's the thing. Have you ever seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre 4?
No.
He's in it.
Is he? Wait a minute. I did see that movie.
I saw a still of it where in that he says, all right. Like, he does in Days of the Confused.
Genius! McConaughey! Oh, it's so good.
Okay, we're about wrapping up our time here. But we're both stoked on 2001 Space Odyssey and Interstellar. That would mean twice in 1 year I've seen 70mm. Whereas I've only seen one other 70mm movie in my whole life, The Master, and I had to drive up to fucking New York from Philly to see it. And it was like a big investment of time and energy and money, and it was totally worth it.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
You don't like The Master. We'll talk about that in another
talk
episode.
Talk about that later.
Okay. Hey, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much.
We're glad that you checked it out. We can keep the conversation going on our, like, various things. Facebook,
Twitter,
the website. We want your comments, your harassment. Tell us how little we know about horror movies. That's fine. And tell your friends about us. And we're willing to endorse almost anything.
Yes, this is true. Little Baby's Ice Cream, we're talking to you. All
Jeff
right, guys.
Zigu.
Thank you so much. Cinepunks, we're out. Smoke bomb! McConaughey!